I love the sound of breaking glass. J'espère que vous êtes bien à notre écoute. Notre lunchtime en anglais continue avec la chronique Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro. I need the noises of destruction.
Bro, on the Art World Beat, Breaking Glass. Today's episode, collectivizing and yanking art out of its commodified prison, the Lumbung Documenta. This two-part series will consider the impact of a monumental event in the art world, the turning over of the every five-year art festival Documenta in Kassel, Germany, to a series of collectives under the organizational framework of the Indonesian group Rungrupa, the first such direction of a major art festival in the West by a developing world group, an Asian and Muslim at that. Rungrupa and the 50 participants, mostly collectives, proceeded to rethink and refashion in an activist mode the foundational concept of not only how the art object is presented, the place of art in the developing world and in the West, and finally, how art is, rather than simply being consumed, capable of critiquing the productivist development of the West and opposing new ways of being and new solutions. For daring this whole-scale reimagining, the project has been roundly criticized and most often under the rubric of anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism, and criticism of the policies of the Israeli state. This first article will lay out the critique document opposes, and the second will consider the attack on it, as well as examining a more art world-friendly but still cantankerous and challenging simultaneous presentation a few hours away in Berlin, the Berlin Biennale. Documenta closes this weekend, the Biennale last weekend, but both have challenged and in ways tried to upend preconceived perceptions both in the art world and in the world at large. Let's start with the radical slogan of this year's art festival in Kassel. We are not in Documenta 15, we are in Lumbung 1. In Indonesia, a Lumbung is a rice barn, where the surplus harvest is stored to benefit the community in time of need. Rungrupa defines Lumbung as extended to this festival, and more importantly to the world at large, as a practice of collectivizing the fruits of the system of production for the benefits of all. The concept is a developing world answer to the private and extractive schemes of the West, which have menaced and exploited the rest of the world for so long. In the art world, the application of Lumbung means not only throwing the festival open to collective labor, but also viewing art not primarily as commodity and as part of a commodity exchange, but rather making primary the practice of art as a means of opening up group participation and education. Thus, art is not individually consumed, but rather collectively digested as an opening to changing the world. As such, this definition also challenges, as Rungrupa says, the old system of state funding and our free market art systems, or even biennial circuits, such as Documenta, which it defines as highly competitive, globally expansive, greedy, and capitalist. In short, exploitative and extractive. Thus, for example, another Indonesian collective, Taring Padi, uses cardboard cutouts in street demonstrations and murals to indict the killing behind the global foundation of Indonesia's island paradise, Bali, financed by Western capital and built on the graves of the dead. These artworks then resist being torn from their function in real lives in their social-political context, and thus no longer pursuing mere individual expression, no longer needing to be exhibited in standalone objects or sold to individual collectors and hegemonic state-funded museums. Lumbung Calling, another slogan of the festival, this one adopted from The Clash's apocalyptic fable London Calling, here converted into a plea for humanity to avert the apocalypse, in practice has meant work that, unlike much of the objects in the Berlin Biennale, does not obscure the issue by hiding behind the patina of making vague statements through a highly conceptual veil of abstraction. For daring to confront these issues directly, for bloodying itself with a confrontation of the actual results of these centuries of Western colonialism, the first critique that this version of Documenta faced by Western critics was that this was not art. The difference is, we're striking between the biennale, with its more traditional mode of the individuals passively consuming individual works and measuring their comprehension against the artist's concealed intent, and Documenta, with its group of students and mostly young people engaging with and working out through various spaces provided by the festival, the ways in which works spurred discussion and involved participants, turning them from commodified consumers into activists, together groping for means of change. As in the metaphor of Lumbung, the rice collective, many of these means recalled earlier methods of being part of the earth, as in the elaborate Vietnamese garden constructed on the grounds by a Hanoi collective. But also, and necessarily, their works also bore the traces of formerly or still colonized peoples laboring under the burden of developing nations, a sobriquet that conceals the fact not only that they have been vastly underdeveloped and exploited by the West, but also that their path should be itself productivist, always developing. Thus, at the Friedrichianum, the main site of the festival, there was a tent labeled Indigenous Embassy with the slogan, "We want land, not handouts." As everywhere on the earth, the claims of the original tenders of the earth are gathering steam and being taken more seriously as their practices vie for attention against harmfully extractive methods which are destroying the planet. To cite two, the battle in Canada for its place as leading mineral miner versus the claims of those on the land whose life will be upended, and Biden's environmental bill, which opens Alaska and the Gulf of Mexico up to oil drilling. At the festival, a Times Square-like continual ticker above the building kept pacing out the money the Australian government owes First Nations groups from 1901 to the present, with the figure reaching into the trillions and still counting. Instead of simply locating themselves in the two main halls, as other iterations of the festival have done, Documenta's collectives have also expanded out into the city in what Wangrupa calls the ecosystem. The institution itself, begun in 1955, was designed as an antidote and mea culpa for the place of its site Kessel as a primary manufacturer of the armaments which fueled the Nazi war machine. As such, Documenta, the most political of all art festivals, has always taken as its mission to highlight this grievous moment in the city's past. This trend broadens in this latest iteration as the Lumbung Documenta expands or occupies not only various sites in the city, but also expands its critique to encompass the post-war development of what became known as the City of the Car, with the automobile replacing weapons manufacturing in the 50s economic miracle, a situation globally that has accounted for numerous deaths in densely populated urban areas because of diesel pollution. Thus, the headquarters of the clothing company CNA, an unadorned and monotonous facade typical of post-war reconstruction, is illuminated with a tarring potty banner, ablaze with color and featuring a steadfast Karl Marx in the upper corner, looking askance at the company, which profited under the Nazi regime, seizing Jewish assets and employing forced labor, which has also been accused in the global era equally of employing sweatshop labor from the developing world. A plaza or plots near the center is covered underfoot with headlines from Romanian Dan Pershovici's horizontal newspaper, with one containing the slogan in capital letters W-A-R and in between T-E, so it says War on Water, proclaiming the water wars to come. Another ominously announcing that, "I am so grateful to be in the last Documenta." And a third picturing a word balloon from an ocean liner whose cheery passengers address those below being submerged in a raft with the comforting words, "We are all in this together." Pershovici's project, as does much of the work here, democratizes the staid art world convention of conceptualism, whose meanings are obscure and which led not to a critique of art world materiality, but only to a new form of commodification, this time focusing on the word as syllable object. What might have been a plaza, a public place for gathering at the corner of two streets in the center of Kassel, because of the dominance of the automobile in 50 city planning, which with its concentration on freeways devastated whole communities in, for example, Boyle Heights in Los Angeles and in Houston, became simply a traffic circle with pedestrians directed underground. Wangrupa turned the underground space over to the Black Quantum Futurism Collective from Philadelphia, whose photo montages with slogans over a slave ship read, "Black people navigate Western timelines as our ancestors did the stars," and "Dissolve the Arrow of Progress," as the Black Futurist Collective called attention to the global devastation this progress caused. It must be mentioned also that with the Ukraine war now being the occasion for Germany and Japan to rearm, Kassel is again becoming a site not only of the manufacture of cars, but also of weapons building for a new German war machine. What could possibly go wrong? The extension out into the city also featured multiple works in the manufacturing district of Bettenhausen, generally ignored in previous Documentas. The Hallenbad Ost, formerly a workers' swimming facility, was taken over by Taring Party, the most radical group in the festival. That Taring Party should install itself in a workers' facility is fitting, since the group from Yogyakarta aligns itself with working-class concerns. The collective traces its origins to its involvement in protests and street demonstrations at the moment where the 1997-98 Asian financial crisis brought down the longtime U.S.-supported dictator Suharto. The name itself means fangs of rice, suggesting the grain can support a community, but also that it can prick opponents. The lawn of the Hallenbad Ost, part of an interior and exterior display of over 100 objects from the group's 22 years of active protest, was filled with cardboard cutout puppets used in street demonstrations called Weiyang Kardus, which take the more elite form of Indonesian puppet theater and make it available for expressing people's political concerns. One had a Suharto figure clutching money bags while hovering over a ballot box and swaying elections. A gorgeous multitude of murals, often visually citing the Mexican muralist Diego Rivera and David Alfaro Siqueiros, as a woman in the center of one mural bursts her chains, were accompanied also by another transposing Bosch's vision of hell into a modern history of the diabolical world of Indonesia's exploitation by successively the Dutch, the Japanese, and Suharto and the global money backing him. That moment was laid out in a series of murals about the murder of thousands on the island of Bali in 1965 and 66, and the subsequent decision, even as the killings of the island's left and any who held an association with them continued, to build Bali into a global pleasure dome with money supplied by the World Bank, the French Tourism Board, and the UN Development Program. The construction was done, Taring Party relates, with no input from those on the island and with hotels possibly built over the mass graves which concealed this latest massacre in the country's history. This is the largest massacre in the country's history, worse than the Dutch or the Japanese. One black and white mural accompanying this story features an army officer prominently leading the killing below him. Countering this is a stunning full-color mural of an Indonesian princess with a tiger striding majestically across a busy modern intersection. In the background are billboards proposing skincare and other Western capitalist beauty projects, which the commanding natural beauty of the princess negates. Her almost mystical presence also recalls the Indonesian folklore and its use in sustaining the country against its history of incursions, outlined, for example, in Eka Kurniawan's novel Beauty is a Wound. Finally, a more traditional art world presentation was to be found in Castle Sepulchral Museum, containing medieval burial objects, in an exhibition about myth by Spanish artist Eric Beltran. A wall of various mystical representations is introduced by standard late postmodern art world gobbledygook, claiming that myths only produce vacant meaning, are unknowable and equal, and so that's why I try to understand them. The one saving grace of a juxtaposition of images which never exceed their place as a pretentious collage is that of Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, with a slightly oversized nose as Pinocchio, calling attention to the lies he tells at every congressional hearing to outwit those who would regulate his enterprise. Documenta 15, the Lumbung Documenta, opens the way for a developing world conception of art that directly embraces the current world crisis and that challenges and will continue to challenge Western traditions and institutions. The attack by those institutions is the subject of the second part of this series. And this is Bro on the Art World Beat, Breaking Glass. Oh, change of mind,
sound of breaking glass. Dennis Bro is the author of Film Noir, American Workers and Postwar Hollywood, Class Crime and International Film Noir, and Maverick or How the West Was Lost. His current book is Hyper-Industrialism and Television Seriality, The End of Leisure and the Birth of the Binge. C'était Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro sur Art District. Très bonne suite de nos programmes, jazzistiques et artistiques, à notre écoute.